have to fight their way out of Paranor, and Beck wasn't sure they were up to it. It was one thing to have survived while traveling aboard the Jarl Shannara, while they were still young. It was another to test themselves when they hadn't fought a real battle in 20 years. Now was a poor time to find out if the magic of the Wish Song could save them from the dangerous and experienced Shadea Aru. In short, it would be best not to get caught. At the top of the stairs, they stopped again while Beck peered around the corner and down the hallway. Nothing moved. The floor seemed deserted. There were no sleeping chambers on this floor, but a little farther on was the stairway that led to the North Tower, which housed the quarters of the Ard Ris. Shadea Aru would be there. After a moment, they started down the corridor for the cold chamber. The biggest danger they faced was that someone else would already be in the room when they got there. That would not only prevent them from carrying out their plan, but would require them to explain why they were there, unescorted and uninvited. It would be a difficult situation. At best, they would probably be forced to flee from the keep. But luck was with them. When they opened the door, they found the cold chamber empty. Rue took a moment to scan the corridor once more, making sure no one had seen them, then nodded to Beck to close the door. They stood inside, in silence, the chilly air penetrating even the heavy fabric of the druid robes. Rue shivered. Beck made a quick survey of the room, glancing toward the deep shadows, peering into the gathered gloom. No candles or torches were lit there, and they wouldn't risk lighting any. But a faint wash of light from moon and stars spilled through the high windows and reflected off the scry waters in the stone basin, letting them see well enough to do their work. Their plan wasn't complicated and didn't require much time. Beck had sensed Penn's presence in the charnels during his initial effort to make contact, but he had lacked time and opportunity to pinpoint his son's location. Now, alone and undisturbed, he would use his magic on the waters to discover exactly where Penn was. Once he had accomplished that, they would slip back down through the keep to Swiftshore and be on their way to retrieve him. The druids might discover what had happened and try to follow, but their vessels were no match for Swiftshore, which was the fastest ship in the sky. With Rue standing watch at the door, Beck moved to the basin and stood looking down at the scry waters and the map of the four lands drawn on the surface of the bowl. The waters were still and untroubled, at rest, save for where the faint pulse of the earth's magic crisscrossed the surface along the earth's lines of power. Beck studied their movements for a moment, then fixed his gaze on the charnels and called up the Wish Song. He did it quickly and quietly, directing the magic toward the area of the waters where he had sensed Penn to be the day before. He kept his concentration focused as he worked the magic deep into the basin, searching. It took him only moments. His connection with his son was strong, born of his own history as a member of a family that had been connected by magic for centuries, and he found him almost instantly. He peered close, tightening down his search, marked the spot in his mind, and pulled the magic back again. He went still, watching the scry waters quiet and smooth once more, silver in the moonlight. He stepped away from the basin and turned back to Rue, nodding. Together, they went out the doorway and back down the empty corridor toward the stairs. Neither spoke, unwilling to break the deep silence, to risk exposing themselves in any way. They would talk when they were aboard Swiftshore and safely away from this place. On cat's paws, they descended the ancient stone stairs toward the torchlit corridor below, listening and watching. They had just emerged from the stairwell into the corridor when the heavy metal-laced nets dropped over them, pinning them to the floor, and dozens of gnome hunters appeared all around them, crossbows notched and ready. Penn had explored the rock troll village for what remained of the day. He'd been so tired he could barely keep his eyes open, but was unable to sleep because of what had happened in Kermadec's home between himself and Cinnaminson. But Kyber's scathing attack on him, an attack he still didn't understand, really troubled him. Once or twice in his wanderings, he thought to return to the house and confront her, but he just couldn't make himself do it. He was embarrassed and hurt, in part because he didn't understand it, but mostly because it had happened in front of Cinnaminson. So he forced himself to stay away until the evening celebration began, the welcome arranged for them by the members of the village, a feast with music and singing, neither of which he had ever associated with trolls. But the music, consisting of pipes, drums, and a curious stringed instrument called a fiol, and the dancing, which was energetic and robust, brought him out of his mood sufficiently that by the time he had eaten two plates of rather wonderful food and drunk several pints of very strong ale, he was feeling pretty good again. He even participated in the dancing, urged on by Kermadec and buttressed by the effects of the ale. He danced with whoever was nearest, men, women, and children alike, as there seemed to be little partnering in the troll forms of dance, and he found himself thoroughly light-headed and happy by the time he was done. Cinnaminson appeared with the others of his little group, and she sat with him during dinner, and even danced with him briefly. But he couldn't find the right words to say to her, and so they didn't talk much. Tagwin was as taciturn as ever at first, though after a little of the ale he began to open up and pontificate endlessly on the virtues of hard work. Kyber smiled and clapped, and spoke pleasantly to Penn, acting as if their earlier confrontation had never happened. It was only when the evening was growing late, and his eyes were so heavy he was afraid he might fall over if he didn't sleep soon, that the elven girl came over to sit beside him. He was alone at that point, sipping at his ale, listening to the music, and watching the trolls dance in the firelight with what appeared to him to be boundless energy. "I was too hard on you earlier," she said, putting her hand over his. "I didn't mean to scold. At the time I was so mad, I just lashed out. I assumed you understood the problem, but thinking it through later, I realized you didn't." He looked at her. "What problem? If I tell you this, you must promise to keep it to yourself. Do you promise?" He nodded. "All right." "When I heard you tell Cinnaminson she couldn't come with us, all I could think about was how insensitive you were being to her situation. You saw it as common sense. If she came, she would be placed in danger again, and you wanted to keep her safe. I saw it through her eyes. You were casting her off as damaged and useless, no longer worthy of being a part of your life. She's in love with you, Pendaren. I warned you about this, but you paid no attention to me. You brought this on yourself, giving her so much of your time aboard ship, telling her how wonderful she was." He bristled instantly. "I didn't say anything I didn't mean. Anyway, I don't see—" She held up one hand in warning. "Don't say anything more until you hear me out." "You don't see, indeed. If you did, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Now listen. What do you think happened to her after that monster killed her father and the other two? Do you think she was left alone? Do you think that all that happened was that she was used to track you? It was bad enough that she had to lie trussed up and helpless below decks and listen to the cries of her father and cousins as they died. That was damage enough for an entire lifetime. But that wasn't the end of it." He went cold. "What are you saying?" Her dark eyes fixed on him. "I'm saying that she endured 3 days alone with that monster, and it wasn't satisfied with using her gift for night sight. It used her for other things, too. She told me. You didn't ask her if she'd been abused physically, did you? It never even occurred to you that she might have been violated in other ways. This thing, this creature that took her, doesn't have any qualms about watching others suffer. It likes it. It enjoys inflicting pain. All kinds of pain. He stared at her. He tried to say something, but the words lodged in his throat. A wave of nausea washed through him. So now she views herself as despicable. Kyber held his gaze. When you tell her she can't go with you anymore, she sees it as an affirmation of what she already believes to be true about herself, that she is worthless, that no one could love her. It doesn't matter that you don't know the truth because she has kept it to herself. It's enough that she knows. Penn looked off into the darkness, filled with sudden rage, filled with a need to exact revenge for what had happened, but impotent to do anything but sit and fume. The images that filled his mind were so terrible that he couldn't bear them. "I didn't realize what I was doing by telling her she couldn't come," he said quietly. "I didn't know." She squeezed his hand. "I wish you still didn't know. I wish I didn't have to tell you. But you still care about the girl, don't you? So you need to know what's happened to her so that you can understand what she's going through. She's fragile in ways that you don't see. She might have mind sight, but it's not sufficient protection against the monsters of this world, and not enough to make up for the loss of her family. Her father, bad as he was, loved her, and she loved him. He was the support she could fall back on when things were too much for her. Who's going to offer her that support now?"
"I am," he said at once.
"Then you can't tell her you intend to leave her behind." Kyber's voice was fierce. "You can't make her safe that way, Penn. I know taking her is dangerous, but leaving her is worse." They stared at each other in silence. In the background, the music and singing of the troll revelers wafted through the darkness, rising above the firelight, echoing off the rock walls of the cliffs. Penn wanted to cry for what he was feeling, but no tears would come.
"I'll tell her she can come," he said finally. "I'll tell her I was wrong, that we need her." She nodded.
"Be careful what you say and how you say it. She wouldn't like it that I've told you what happened. She will probably want to tell you herself one day."
He nodded.
"Thank you, Kyber. Thank you for telling me. Thank you for not letting me make a mistake I couldn't correct." She got to her feet and stood, looking at him. "I just did what I thought I had to do, Penn. But I have to tell you that it doesn't make me feel very good to have done it." She turned and walked away.
Acting on whispered instructions from Shadea Aru, the gnome hunters removed the heavy mesh netting and bound and gagged Beck Olmsford. He could have struggled or used magic to save himself, but he was terrified that if he did so, they would kill Rue. Bitter with disappointment and self-recrimination, he let them take him without a struggle.
"You aren't half so clever as you believe yourself to be," she said to him as the gnomes carried him down into the cellars of the keep. "I knew of your contact with your son the moment you made it. It was impossible to miss. I knew you were pretending at being ill earlier today, too, and that you would come back to the cold chamber to use the scry waters again if you were given the chance. So I gave it to you."
She leaned over and tapped him lightly on the nose, a taunting gesture he couldn't fail to register.
"You couldn't get a clear reading of where Penderyn was from your first contact. I saw that right away. So I knew you would have to come back and probe the scry waters again when you thought we weren't around to see what you were searching for. Somehow you found us out, didn't you? It was probably Trant Rowan who gave us away. He lacks the finesse needed to fool someone as perceptive and experienced as you. Disappointing, if not entirely unexpected. At least I knew enough not to trust that you had been taken in by his explanation. I knew enough to read you the same way you must have read him." She was silent for a time, staring straight ahead into the darkness, keeping pace with the guards who bore him. She took big, full strides that radiated power and determination. She looked taller and broader through the shoulders than he remembered, and there was a confidence about her that suggested she was equally comfortable with weapons or words. He did not know what his sister had done to antagonize her, but Shadea Aru was a formidable enemy.
"Your son has turned out to be a meddlesome boy, Beck," she continued after a while, "but no more so than Tagwin or the others who joined him to hunt for your sister. I took steps to put an end to their search, but until now they have managed to elude me. I tracked them all the way from Patch Run to the elven village of Emberin, and from there east to the Lazarene. Then I lost them. But now, thanks to you, I know exactly where they are."
She smiled down at him, enjoying the dark look on his face.
"Oh, you want to know how I know, since I wasn't in the cold chamber with you. Anticipating your nocturnal visit, I marked the scry waters with a little magic of my own before you tampered with them. They will reveal to me exactly what they revealed to you. That should tell me everything I need to know about your son's whereabouts, I expect. Then I will find him and deal with him."
Beck listened with growing despair, aware of how completely he had been duped into doing just what Shadea had wanted him to do in the first place. Now he was a prisoner and unable to do anything to help either Pen or his sister. At least they were both alive. He could assume that much from what she had just told him. He could also assume she would try to change that. They continued down until he smelled the damp and felt the cold of the deep underground. Somewhere not too far away, he heard water running. The heat of the druid fire was absent, as if that part of the keep was far removed from the earth-warmed core. Finally, they arrived at a corridor lined with heavy doors kept closed by iron bolts thrown through iron rings. His captors opened one of the doors and placed him in the tiny room beyond, a space barely larger than a closet. There was a wooden bed, straw, and a bucket. The floor, ceiling, and walls were rough and uneven and had been hollowed out of the bedrock. They untied his arms and legs, but left his gag in place.
"Remove the gag when I am gone," Shadea said. "But first, listen to what I have to say. Behave yourself, and you might come out of this alive. I am locking your beloved wife up separately in a place far away from you, somewhere you can't find her easily. I know stone walls and iron doors can't hold you, but they can hold her. If you try to escape, if your guards even think you are trying to escape, she will be killed at once. Do you understand?"
Beck nodded without speaking.
"Those guards will be stationed on each floor leading up, at each door, and they will communicate with each other regularly. If someone fails to answer, that will be the end of your chances of seeing your wife alive again. Behave yourself, and you and your family might still survive this."
She motioned the gnome hunters back into the corridor, followed them out, closed the door with a heavy thud, and threw the bolt. Standing alone in the darkness and listening to their receding footsteps, Beck Ohmsford was certain of one thing. No matter what Shadea Aru said, if he didn't find a way to get out of there on his own, he wasn't getting out at all. Chapter 14.
"I've been thinking about what I said to you yesterday," Pen said, sitting down beside Cinnaminson. It was midday, and he had been searching for her for almost an hour. She kept her gaze directed straight ahead as her fingers worked the threads of the delicate scarf she was weaving on a tiny hand loom.
How she could tell one color from the other was a mystery to him, but from the look of the completed portion, she was having no trouble doing so.
I spoke without sufficient thought for what I was saying, he continued, watching her face for signs of a response. You asked if I still cared about you, and I do. That was why I was so quick to tell you that you couldn't go with us. All I could think about was what it would mean to me if something more happened to you.
Still, she said nothing. They were seated high up in the bowl of the gathering place, the amphitheater used for elections when a matron was chosen, for presentations of music and song when there were celebrations and festivals, and for meetings of the entire population when it was necessary to make determinations that might affect the whole of the village. It sat well back against the cliffs and to the south end of the village, ringed by stone walls and hardy spruce, an oasis of calm in the otherwise bustling community. It was deserted, save for the boy and the girl. Penn sighed. I want you to forget about what I said. You saved our lives back on the Lazarine when the Gallifile was hunting us. You kept us from danger again in the slags. You proved your value then, and I don't have any right to start questioning it now. I don't have any right to tell you what to do. You can decide for yourself.
Have you been talking with Kyber? She asked quietly.
I've been thinking about what she said, he answered, avoiding the question. She was so angry with me. It took me a while to sort it out. He brushed at his red hair, knotting it in his fingers. I didn't know why she was so angry until I had thought about it for a while. I was presuming to speak for you when I didn't have the right. You asked me because you wanted my support. I should have realized that, and I should have given it.
She continued her weaving, her fingers moving smoothly and steadily, feeding in the colored threads and pulling them through, using the shuttle to separate and tighten down. He waited, not knowing what else to say, afraid he had already said too much.
Do I have your support now? She asked him finally.
Yes.
Do you want me to come with you? You, personally?
Yes, I do.
Why? Tell me, Penderin, why do you want me to come with you?
He hesitated.
I don't want this to be about you and me.
But it is about you and me. It has been from the first day we met. Don't you know that?
He nodded.
I guess I do. I just don't want to use that as the reason for your coming. But it is the reason. I want you to come because I want you to be with me. I don't want you anywhere else, but with me.
She went still, her fingers motionless, her entire body frozen. He saw her differently in that instant, as if she had been captured in an indelible image, a portrait of such exquisite beauty and depth that he would never imagine her any other way. It made his heart ache to see her so. It made him want to do anything for her. Without looking at him, she reached for him with her right hand, laying it feather light across his own.
Then I will come, she said.
She went back to her weaving, silent once more, her attention on her work, her hand gone from his. He stared at her for a moment, wanting to say something more, but deciding against it. Just then, things were better left as they were. He rose.
I think I should see how the Skatalo looks, now that they've moved her off the plains. I'll find you later.
She nodded, and he went down off the risers to one of the passageways that exited from the amphitheater floor to the ring of stone walls and spruce trees outside. From there, he walked down through the village to the south gates and passed out onto the flats, then worked his way back toward the cliffs until he reached the shallow defile into which the Skatalo had been pulled to conceal her from view. He did that without really being aware of anything but Cinnaminson, her face, her body,
her voice, her words, her smell, the movement of her hands as she wove the delicate scarf. He was still thinking about her 2 hours later, happily lost in a mix of dreams and memories that gave him the first real peace he had known in days, when the troll watch sounded the alarm. Kyber Elysidil was standing with Tagwin outside Kermadec's home, listening while the little man held forth on the peculiarities of troll life, when the horns began to wail and the drums to boom. The sounds were so unexpected and so earth-shattering that for a moment she stood staring at the dwarf, who stood staring back. "What is that?" she managed finally. He shook his burly head, his blunt fingers tugging at his beard anxiously as he glanced around.
"Don't know. A warning?"
Trolls had begun running everywhere, all sizes and shapes, men, women, and children, entire families and households, charging out of buildings and down roads and alleyways with a single-mindedness that suggested they understood the sounds perfectly. After a moment, Kyber was able to discern a pattern to their movements that suggested what was happening. The women and children were all retreating back through the village toward the cliffs, the biggest scooping up the smallest in squirming bundles. They took nothing else with them, not one single implement or piece of clothing. They went without the slightest hesitation or thought for what they were doing, moving swiftly without seeming to look rushed. "They have practiced this often," Kyber thought. The men, meanwhile, were all moving in the other direction, down toward the front walls of the village, to the gates and ramparts that served as protection and fortification. Some wore chain mail and plate armor. All carried weapons. It didn't take a genius to figure out what was happening. Kyber rushed back inside the house for her short sword. When she came out again, Kermadec was standing with Tagwin, huge and forbidding in a towering iron helmet and a chainmail chest and shoulder guard.
"We're under attack," he advised, his words clipped and hard.
She had not heard him sound like that before. All of the heartiness and openness was gone. His voice had gone tight and rough with anger and menace.
"Airships fly in from the south bearing druid insignia. We can assume the reason for their visit."
Kyber buckled on her sword, then felt for the reassuring presence of the elf stones in her tunic pocket. She had no idea if she would be required to use them, but she intended to be ready. She glanced at Tagwin, who carried no weapons, then back at Kermadec. "How did they find us?"
The rock troll shook his big head. "No idea. The druids have ways of finding anyone, if they put their minds to it. I don't think they followed you. If they had done so, they would have been here sooner. I think they found you some other way."
He turned away from them to yell instructions to a squad of troll warriors passing by, gesturing toward the south wall, separating out one and sending him in another direction. The village was alive with movement, swarming with trolls. It felt like controlled chaos.
"We're preparing a welcome for our uninvited guests," he said, turning back to them, changing once more to the dwarf language. "We won't attack them until we hear what they have to say. We'll let them talk first."
"Perhaps they're friends," Kyber suggested hopefully, cringing at the loud snort Tagwin gave in response.
"Too many ships for that," Kermadec advised. "If they were friends, they would come in one ship, not in a dozen. They would send a representative ahead to announce their intentions. No. This is an assault force, come for a specific purpose." He glanced around. "Where are young Penderin and the girl?"
Kyber stared at Tagwin. The dwarf shook his head. Neither one had a clue. Kermadec glanced skyward.
"Too late to search for them now. Come with me. Hurry."
At the sound of the battle horns and drums, Pen dropped off the Skatalo's decks to the ground and began to run. He needed no time to consider what he was doing or where he was going. He had left Cinnaminson inside the gathering place. She might still be there, alone and unprotected. She would not know what was happening. She would not know where to run.
He went through the south gates just as they were closing, bursting through the knot of troll warriors bunched at the opening, huge armored shoulders and wide backs straining against the iron-bound barriers and massive locks. Trolls were running everywhere, and the passageways of the village were all but completely blocked by trolls hurrying toward the walls. Pen dodged past them, heading for the amphitheater and Cinnaminson. Shouts and cries rose all around him, their intensity and tone confirming what he already instinctively knew. The village was under attack. He would have liked to find Kyber and Tagwin to know more, but he would have to track them down later. First, he had to reach Cinnaminson. He gained a side street that was mostly deserted and led straight to his destination. He was running hard now, flushed with the heat of his efforts, a frantic warning sounding in his mind, "Don't lose her. Don't let anything happen to her." Ahead, the walls of the amphitheater loomed darkly through the ring of trees that surrounded the interior bowl. There was no movement at the entrance, no sign of life. Perhaps she had already gotten out. Perhaps one of the others had come to find her. He glanced over his shoulder at the village walls, where trolls were taking up positions all along the ramparts and at the gates. The central point of defense seemed to be the gates he had just passed through, the ones facing south down the broad corridor between the Razor Mountains west and the Charnels east. The reason for this became immediately apparent when he glanced skyward. A dozen black warships filled the horizon, flying down the gap directly toward Taupo Ruff.
Shades!
He breathed the word in a whisper of fear as he burst into the tunnel leading into the amphitheater and nearly collided with Cinnaminson, who was trying to make her way out from the other end. She was careening from wall to wall, her hands clutching her ears to block out the sounds of the horns and drums. "Cinnaminson!" he shouted as he reached her, grabbing her shoulders and pulling her against him.
"Pen!"
she gasped in reply, burying her head in his shoulder. Her weaving materials and loom were gone, and he could feel her heart pounding.
"I couldn't find my way out. The sounds disrupt my mind sight. It was too much for me."
"It's all right," he said, stroking her hair. Her breath was coming in quick, frantic bursts. "I'll get you back to the others. They must have gone into the mountains to hide. The sky is full of druid warships right outside the walls. We have to go. Can you walk?" She nodded into his shoulder, then lifted her face to his.
"I knew you would come for me."
He kissed her impulsively. "I'll always come for you. Always. Come on, run." They hurried back through the tunnel to the streets outside. But as they reached the far end, Pen drew up short and pulled her back against the passageway wall, keeping hidden in the shadows. One of the druid airships was hovering just outside the village wall and across from their hiding place. Any attempt at escape would require them to cross open ground, where they would quickly be seen. Pen bit his lip in frustration. They were trapped. Kyber Elysidil crouched with Tagwin on the roof of a building some 50 yards back from the south gates. Both wore dark robes drawn close and hoods pulled up. They hid behind a half-wall facade that rose in front of them, situated where they could see and hear what was about to happen. Kermadec stood on the ramparts above the south gates, surrounded by a squad of huge trolls wearing body armor and insignia-crested helmets. The Matarin was watching as the druid airships, their flags clearly visible now, formed a line just beyond the outer wall, intimidating black hulks hanging over the village like birds of prey. There was an unmistakable arrogance to their positioning, as if they were disdainful of anything the villagers might try to do to harm them. No attempt was being made to suggest that this was a friendly visit. Kermadec had been right. The druids had come to threaten. After the foremost airship had dropped almost to the ground, a single druid descended the rope ladder and walked forward. He was a big man, and as he approached, he lowered his hood to reveal his face,
a gesture clearly meant to identify himself to the trolls.
"Trant Rowan," Tagwin whispered to Kyber. "One of Shadea's bunch."
She watched the Southlander come almost to the gates before stopping, his eyes fixing on the trolls standing atop them.
"Kermadec," he called,
his voice clearly audible in the near silence.
"I'm here, Trant Rowan," the Matteran called back. "Open your gates to us." "I don't think so." "Then bring out the boy, Pen Olmsford, and you do not need to. Just the boy. The others can remain if you want them to." "You are a bold man coming into our country and making demands as if it were your own."
Kermadec's voice had taken on a decided edge.
"You might want to give some thought to where you stand before you say anything else. Is the boy here?" "What boy?"
There was a measured silence.
"You are a fool to challenge us, Kermadec." "The only fool I see is the one who serves Shadea Aru. The only fool I see is the one who betrayed the Ard Rhys in a way so foul and indefensible that it will surely lead to his destruction. Don't threaten me, Trant Rowan. Don't threaten the trolls of Taupo Ruff. We were the defenders of the druids for almost 20 years before this dark time in your history, and we will one day be defenders of the druids again. We know enough about you to be able to challenge you, if that is what is required. Turn your ships around and fly out of here while you still can. Don't mistake where you are."
Trant Rowan folded his arms.
"We have the boy's parents, Kermadec. We know that Arryn Elysadil is dead. You have no one who will stand with you in this. You are alone."
Kyber and Tagwin exchanged a quick, shocked glance. The druids had Beck Olmsford and his wife? How had that happened?
"He's lying,"
Tagwin hissed.
"Alone?"
Kermadec laughed.
"The trolls are always alone. It is a condition of life to which we are not only accustomed, but one that we prefer. Threats of the sort you seem intent on making don't frighten us. If you have the parents, you don't need the boy, do you? Can the parents not give you everything you need? What is it that you need, by the way, you haven't said? What is it that a boy can give you that his parents can't? You speak as if you know, but I think, in fact, you don't. Explain yourself, and maybe I can be persuaded to do as you say."
Trant Rowan stood unmoving on the flats, dark and solitary, anger radiating off him like heat.
"We are to raise your village and kill you all, Kermadec, if you resist us. Those are my orders. I have brought gnome hunters to carry out those orders. I have brought mutants as well. Do you wish your village and people destroyed? Is that your intent?"
Kermadec seemed to be thinking it over.
"My intent, Trant Rowan," he said finally,
his rough voice so dark with menace that Kyber immediately tensed,
"is to see you and your raiders and your airships consumed by the fires of the netherworld that spawned you."
His arm swept up. Instantly, a hail of fire-tipped arrows arced out of the village and fell all across the flats beyond. In the next instant, the flats exploded in gouts of fire that spread quickly down concealed channels in a crisscross pattern that blanketed the earth for 200 yards. The flames leapt so high that one of the airships caught fire and was consumed immediately, the fire spreading up the bottom of its hull to find added fuel in yards of light sheaths strapped to its gunwales. The ship heaved in response to the blaze that consumed it, tried futilely to rise into the sky, then shuddered, blew apart, and fell in ruins onto the flats. The other airships were backing away by then, powered up in response to the threat and lifting swiftly beyond the reach of the flames. Trant Rowan had gone into a protective crouch, hands moving, his druid magic sweeping about him. Now he, too, backed away, avoiding the flames as best he could, shielded well enough that he didn't seem threatened. His black robes swirled about him in a wind generated by the sudden heat as he reached an open spot, caught hold of the rope ladder once more, and began to climb. The trolls of Taupo Ruff were attacking the airships using catapults now. The wooden machines were mounted all along the ramparts, their cradles flinging huge rocks through the smoke-filled air with deadly precision. Several found their marks, smashing through the hulls and sails of the airships, leaving gaping holes and ragged tears in the wood and fabric. One brought down a mast, collapsing it onto the deck and sending the airship into a spin that took it out of the fight. The gnome hunters aboard the ships fought back with crossbows and slings, filling the sky with a cloud of deadly missiles, but the arrows and stones fell harmlessly, bouncing off heavy armor and rock walls and doing little damage to the well-protected trolls. For a moment, it seemed as if the battle was over almost before it had begun. The entire south end of the flats was on fire, grasses and scrub and whatever was in those trenches and holes burning fiercely. The druid airships were in retreat, those not already down vanishing beyond the flames and smoke. Trant Rowan had disappeared with them, his flagship turned about with the others. But already, Kermadec was coming down off the ramparts and signaling to his men to do the same. In dark, bulky knots, they began to retreat through the village toward the cliffs. Kyber and Tagwin climbed down from their hiding place, casting anxious glances toward the flats, where fresh trouble would appear. They had just gotten to the ground when Kermadec came charging up to them.
"We have to find that boy," he snapped, turning momentarily to yell something to the trolls charging past. "If we lose him now, this will all have been for nothing. Where do we look?"
"He might have found his way to the cliffs," Tagwin suggested quickly. "He might not need finding."
"I would have heard if he were there. I left word to be informed when he showed himself. No, Bristlebeard, he's still out here in the village somewhere."
As they tried frantically to come up with something that would help, Kyber threw off the heavy concealing cloak, which was now more hindrance than help. As she did so, her fingers brushed across the small bulk of the elf stones. She jammed her hand into her pocket and yanked them out. Now that the druids had located them, there was no reason not to call upon the magic. "I know how to find him," she said, dumping the blue stones into her palm. "Stand away from me." They did so at once, neither choosing to question her command. Eyes closed, she retreated into her calming center, reaching for the magic. Arryn had trained her in that approach, so the effort was almost second nature. Even the presence of the elfstone magic was no longer entirely unfamiliar after the slags, and she recognized the sudden flash of heat that rose in response to her summons. Tendrils of life pulsed from her hand through her body, then back again, gathering speed and power, building in intensity. The magic of the stones filled her, a wash of power finding a welcome home. She let it happen, left herself open to its need. The blue light burst from the elf stones and shot through the village streets and buildings, through stone and timbers, power that solid materials could not contain. The vision formed and tightened, and the three who watched saw them appear in the haze, the boy and the rover girl, crouched in the shadow of a darkened tunnel.
"The amphitheater!"
Kermadec shouted, and despite the encumbering weight of his massive armor, he began to run. Pen Ohmsford had waited just an instant too long to make his break from the tunnel. When the fighting started, he stayed where he was, Cinnaminson close beside him, as fire erupted from outside the village walls in huge gouts, and then catapults began launching boulders, and gnome hunters retaliated with slings and crossbows. A hail of missiles clattered against the stone of the walls and buildings outside their hiding place, and the boy did not dare chance a break without better protection. Then, abruptly,
The fighting stopped as clouds of dark smoke rolled across the flats and began to seep into the village as well. Still, Penn hesitated, unsure. He counted off 20 seconds, then took Cinnaminson's hand and pulled her after him. "Run!" he ordered, breaking for the open street. But the instant he showed himself, the huge bulk of an airship hove into view, slicing through the screen of smoke and flames. Gnome hunters crowded the gunwales, crossbows and slings, firing at everything that moved. Out in the open and unprotected, the boy and the rover girl were instant targets. A flurry of darts whipped past them, striking the stone walls in a cacophony of tiny, violent explosions. One sliced through Penn's ribs, spinning him around. Another struck him in the arm and sent him sprawling against the closest wall.
"Penn, what's happening?"
Cinnaminson cried, crouching on her hands and knees in the dirt, her face frantic with confusion and fear. Slingstones clattered all around her like hail. "Get up!" he screamed, hauling her back to her feet, blood running down his arm and side. "Run!" Searching for any sort of shelter that would deflect the deadly missiles, he tried to shield her as he pulled her after him. It seemed as if they were the only ones left in the village, the streets and buildings empty, and the inhabitants all safely inside the tunnels and caves. But where were the tunnels? In what direction? Smoke obscured everything, and he had gotten turned around completely in his effort to escape. A tiny alcove at the back of a building offered temporary shelter, and he shoved Cinnaminson inside, both of them gasping and bloodied. "I'm going to get us killed," he screamed at himself. "What am I supposed to do?" Overhead, the druid warship was swinging back around, searching for movement. They were safe for the moment, but trapped. Sooner or later, those gnome hunters would land and begin a search of the buildings. They couldn't stay where they were. They had to get out of there.
"Penderin!"
a familiar voice boomed, causing the boy to jump.
"Kermadec, we're here!"
He yanked Cinnaminson from their shelter and began to run toward the sound of the rock troll's voice, hugging the walls that best protected them as they went. Overhead, the smoke was building in thick, black clouds, and the airship was a massive shadow wrapped in its haze. The gnome hunters were still firing blindly into the village, and the boy could feel bolts and arrows whistle past him as he ran. Then Kermadec appeared in front of them, a huge, armored behemoth. Without slowing, he snatched them up like children, tucking one under each arm.
"Can't afford to lose you now," he said,
pounding ahead like a great beast of burden.
"Hold tight!"
Gripped by one massive arm like a sack of grain, bouncing up and down with each footfall, Penn felt as if his eyes were going to be shaken loose from his head. But on balance, he decided that was a small price to pay for being rescued. He closed his eyes to steady himself and waited patiently for the bouncing to stop. Chapter 15. When Kermadec set them down again, Penn and Cinnaminson were safely inside the caves that formed the rock troll fortress in the cliffs above the village. He had carried them in through an entrance concealed in the rocks, bundled them up a set of narrow stone steps to a door that opened after he'd manipulated various jagged outcroppings, then deposited them where they could spend a few moments regaining their equilibrium.
"We thought no one was coming,"
Cinnaminson offered, her face pale and her honey hair disheveled and coated with dust.
"Oh, it only took finding out where you were,"
the big troll replied cheerfully. His strange, flat face glanced at her briefly.
"You can thank the elf girl for that. She had the magic, some blue gems that showed an image of you hiding in the tunnel of the gathering place."
The elf stones, Penn thought. He had forgotten them entirely. But of course she can use them now, when there is no longer any reason to guard against revealing our presence.
I remembered Cinnaminson and went back for her, Penn said. But then after I found her, I got lost.
Easy enough to do in our streets, young Penn Darren. They were constructed to get you lost, if you weren't one of us. No need to say anything more about it. You're safe now, and that's what matters.
He released the locks on a concealed door and pulled it open to admit them to the safe hold. Inside, it was controlled chaos of the same sort that Penn had experienced in the village on the approach of the druid warships. Trolls bustled in all directions, each with a seemingly different task to accomplish. The chamber was huge, a monstrous cavern fully 50 feet high and more than 100 across. Dozens of tunnels led away to places the boy could not see for the twists and turns in the corridors. But the openings to the left of where they stood formed a series of fortified redoubts in the cliff wall above Taupo Ruff. Sunlight slanted through these overlooks in bright streamers, chasing back the shadows. Smaller cracks and crevices in the stone of the cliff wall admitted additional light. The combination of sunlit openings gave the chamber a peculiarly dappled look, but one that allowed the inhabitants to see clearly. Kermadec refastened the locks on the concealed door, then added a pair of huge bars that slipped into iron cradles to further seal the entry.
That should keep out any unwanted visitors, he declared, brushing off his hands.
He glanced around.
Come with me.
He led them to the left, to one of the redoubts, motioning the workers aside and moving to the edge of a thick protective wall of stone blocks that all but closed off the entry. He beckoned the boy and the girl forward, and when they were standing beside him at the fortifications, pointed outside.
I know you can't see what's out there, Rover girl, but young Penderin can describe it to you in detail later. It's what's been sent to bring him back.
The druid airships had repositioned just outside the walls of the village, hovering not far off the ground, but well back from the possibility of catapult attacks that might be launched from the cliffs. Dozens of gnome hunters were scurrying down rope ladders and up to the village walls, some carrying battering rams, some grappling hooks and ropes. They were already scaling the walls and forcing the gates. Behind them lumbered several dozen creatures that looked as if they had been fashioned from wet mud hardened by the sun, creatures that resembled trolls but lacked the proper proportions and features, as if someone had concocted a batch of poor imitations.
Mutants, Penn whispered.
Our worst enemies. No brains, no feelings, no purpose. They are one step above rocks on the evolutionary ladder. Magic controls them easily. In the old days, it was the warlock lord who controlled them. Now, it is our druid adversaries. The Ard Rhys would weep.
He gestured toward the flats.
Those explosions earlier? We used oil culled from the darker regions of the Malg, capped in barrels and buried in the ground, highly flammable. The druids weren't expecting that. It gave us a chance to get safely away once we knew that a fight was our only recourse. But that's all the advantage we get from down there. We fight now from up here, in our redoubt. For today, at least.
He touched their shoulders and led them back into the cavern.
By tomorrow we'll be gone from here. I need to make ready for our departure, and you need to rest.
He searched the cavern for a moment, then shouted,
Atalan!
A burly troll with the blackest eyes Penn had ever seen lumbered up to them. His dark gaze shifted from Kermadec to the boy and girl, then back again.
I have work to do. Now you have new work to do. Take young Penderin and his friend and find their companions. Take them to one of the upper chambers. See that they all have something to eat and drink and a place to sleep. They will leave at first light. I'll select their escort.
The other troll stepped closer.
What about me, Kermadec? Am I to go?
His voice was rough and surly. He made it sound more like a demand than a request. Kermadec gave him a long, measured look.
I will give it some thought.
Then he turned back to Penn and Cinnaminson.
Atalan will see to it that you are made comfortable. The three of you should get along fine. You are all the same age, if not the same temperament.
He walked away without looking back, leaving the three staring after him. Atalan shook his head.
He treats me like a child. Who does he think he is?
Neither Penn nor Cinnaminson was about to attempt an answer to that one, so they kept quiet. Penn was thinking they might have been better off if Kermadec had left them on their own. Atalan was still staring after the Matarin. Then he seemed to remember his charges. He gave them a cursory look and shrugged.
Come with me.
He led them through the main chamber to a set of steps cut into the rock, and from there, upstairs to a new level. He didn't speak for a time, trudging ahead with the movements of one resigned to a fate he didn't deserve. When they reached the top of the stairs, he glanced back at them.
Do you have a brother?
He asked Penn. The boy shook his head.
Well, if you did, I would hope he would treat you better than Kermadec treats me. He was born earlier, but not necessarily smarter. He is Matarin now, but I will be Matarin one day too.
He broke off and turned away, leading them into a series of narrow tunnels that twisted and turned through the rock. Several times they encountered trolls coming from the other direction, but not once did Atalan give way, bullying past the oncoming trolls with an insistence that bordered on rudeness. He seemed of such an entirely different temperament than Kermadec that Penn could not come to terms with the idea that they were really brothers.
So you are the reason for all this madness, Atalan offered at one point. What is it about you that attracts this kind of attention from the druids?
Penn shook his head. The Ard Rhys is my aunt.
Your aunt?
Atalan seemed impressed.
Missing for several weeks now, isn't she? Do they think you know where she is?
I don't know what they think, except that they don't want me hunting for her.
Atalan nodded. That would explain why they want you so bad. It would explain why my brother is so intent on helping you, too. He thinks the Ard Rhys is the Word's own child. He thinks she can do no wrong. He forgets what she was before, a creature of darkness and murder. You know of this, don't you?
Penn nodded. He was growing angry. She was a creature of the Morgor, and not responsible for what she did, he answered in clipped tones. Atalan glanced back once more.
If you say so.
They went on through the tunnels until they had reached a room far back in the cliff rock, where the light was dim and hazy, and the noise of the activity taking place below was muted almost to silence. The rock troll gestured.
Wait here.
He disappeared down another passageway, and when he was safely out of hearing, Penn said to Cinnaminson,
I don't think he likes us much.
She turned her milky gaze on him and smiled.
You don't like him either. But this is mostly about his brother. You shouldn't take it personally.
He nodded, thinking it was easy to say, but hard to do, especially when it was your family that was being attacked. But she was right, of course, so he put the matter aside. They sat together in the chamber, listening to the faraway sounds of the trolls and waiting for something to happen. When Atalan finally returned, he was carrying food and drink, which he deposited in front of them with barely a word before disappearing again. With nothing better to do, they began to eat. But it wasn't more than a few minutes later that Tagwin and Kyber appeared at the chamber entrance.
Shades, Pendaren, can't you stay out of trouble for 5 minutes without someone keeping watch over you? Snapped the latter. What happened to you out there? Are you all right, Cinnaminson?
She rushed over to the rover girl and embraced her warmly, giving Penn a dark look. Tagwin, standing at the entry with his arms folded over his burly chest, knit his brow in reproof and glared at him. Penn could tell already that nothing he said was going to make any difference. Aboard the druid flagship Athabasca, Trant Rowan stood at the forward rail with Pison Wentz, and watched the gnome hunters flood the abandoned troll village.
Already, the smell of smoke rising from fires and the sound of furniture being smashed had begun to reach them. Their orders, once it was determined that Kermadec intended to fight, were to destroy as much of Taupo Ruff as possible and then lay siege to the cliffside redoubt. The trolls might think themselves safe inside their rock fortress, but the druid warships were equipped with catapults designed to breach such defenses. More to the point, the trolls were outnumbered and constrained by the presence of their women and children. The trolls might hold out for a day or even two, but in the end, they would be overrun. "I don't like it that Shadea is so intent on finding this boy," Pison Wendt said quietly, his gimlet eyes shifting to find Rowan's dark face. "I don't like it that we're out here at all." "Do you suspect that she wants us out of the way?" the Southlander asked, keeping his attention focused on the progress of the gnomes. Wentz had brought them to Paranor from among his own people, but they were under Rowan's immediate command in this operation. Pison Wentz was adept at many things, but he was not a soldier. "I think she would like to see what happened to Taric Molt happen to us." "I don't trust her."
"If you did, you would be unique."
"It troubles me that we have lost both Molt and Iridia in the span of a week's time. One dead and one disappeared, and now here we are, the last two of Shadea's company, dispatched from Paranor to hunt this boy while she cuddles with Garen Serra and schemes to make the position of Ard Rhys a lifetime appointment." Shadea's infatuation with Serra bothered Trant Rowan as well, but he wasn't convinced yet that it was real. Shadea was far too self-centered to make a pairing of equals with another druid. She was up to something, and on first hearing of her alliance with Serra, he had decided to wait her out. She wasn't yet so firmly entrenched that she could afford to discard her old allies. It was unfortunate about Molt and Iridia, but what had happened to them was not directly Shadea's doing. Her obsession with finding Pen Omsford was more troubling. It was the parents who should concern them, he thought, particularly Beck Omsford, who had the use of the magic of the Wish Song, which was Grian Omsford's principal weapon. Yet even though Shadea had locked the senior Omsfords in the cellar of the keep, she wasn't satisfied. Before imprisoning them, she had tricked them into revealing their son's location so that she could continue to hunt him down. She was merely being safe, she insisted. But he thought it was something more. Wheels within wheels. Games and more games. It was a part of the druid culture, but he had never been comfortable with it. He was better at confronting problems in an open way, at meeting them head on. It was one of the reasons he had gone to the Ard Rhys on that last night and asked her quite bluntly to resign her office. She might have been persuaded to do so, had he more time to convince her, and had Shadea not been so anxious to use the liquid knight. But Shadea was ambitious and manipulative. She was more representative of the druid order at large. Trant Rowan was more the exception. Oddly enough, it was one of the reasons he believed himself less vulnerable to Shadea's anger. She knew he was neither ambitious nor covetous. She knew he was content to let her lead. His goal from the beginning had been to remove Grian Omsford as head of the order. It had never been to take her place. In their desire for advancement and acquisition of power, the others were more aggressive than he was. It put them in dangerous waters, while he stood safely on the shore. He refocused his gaze on Taupo Ruff. The gnome attack force had reached the base of the cliff walls and was forming up for an all-out assault. Scaling ladders and grappling hooks were being brought forward, and shield walls were being prepared. When everything was in place, the attack on the redoubt would begin. "I want you to go down into the village with your hunters," he said suddenly to Pison Wentz. When the other gaped at him in disbelief, he added, "so that they can see we are committed to their efforts. I don't need you to lead any charges, Pison. I need you to provide reassurance." "Then you go," the gnome snapped.
I would, but I have to command the airships when we begin to launch the catapults. I would leave you to handle this if you had any idea at all how to use a catapult, but you don't, so your place is on the ground, keeping your gnome hunters in line. The gnome druid gave him a withering stare.
You don't command me, Trant Rowan. No one commands me.
Aboard this ship and on this expedition, I do, he responded calmly. I have been given the responsibility for bringing back the boy. You were sent to aid me, so you must do as I instruct you to do, as you agreed to do by coming with me, I might add. Pison Wentz did not move.
If I do so, what is to prevent you from leaving me behind? What if that is what Shadea has asked of you?
His voice was petulant and accusatory. Trant Rowan held his gaze.
Look at me, Pison. Look at me closely. Do you see treachery in my eyes, or hear it in my voice? Since when have you ever worried that I would betray any of us in this business?
Long moments passed. Their measure, a blink of an eye to both as they stared each other down.
All right,
Pison Wentz said finally. His narrow face reflected displeasure and disgust.
I will do as you ask. I will go down with my people. I trust you, if not Shadea.
He went over to the ladder and began to descend to the flats, his black robes billowing out behind him in the breeze. Trant Rowan watched him in silence, thinking that if Pison Wentz had ever trusted anyone, it was a miracle. Within the caverns of the Troll Redoubt, Penn was sleeping soundly when a rough hand shook his shoulder and an equally rough voice said,
"Wake up! You're leaving!"
He jerked upright, groggy and lethargic, trying to figure out where he was. When he caught sight of Adelan moving over to Tagwin to wake the dwarf, he remembered. He had no idea how long he had slept, but it didn't feel as if it had been more than a few minutes. He rubbed his eyes and climbed to his feet. Kyber and Cinnaminson were standing by the cavern entry, staring out into the corridor. Heavy booming shook the chamber as if a giant were striking the cliff face with a huge hammer. From somewhere not too far away, shouts and cries rose, the sounds of a battle being joined. Penn moved over to the girls.
What's going on? What's happened?
The druids and their gnome hunters are attacking the trolls, Kyber answered.
Hear that pounding?
They're using catapults to launch huge boulders into the cliff walls to break down the troll fortifications. Gnome hunters are scaling the cliffs on ladders and ropes, trying to breach the redoubt.
Which they will do sooner than later,
Kermadec declared, appearing out of the corridor shadows.
They're determined about this, it seems. We have to get you out now, before we lose the chance. All awake and ready to go?
He swung around.
Adelan, gather up their things. Distribute them among the others. Hurry!
Adelan hesitated. Am I to go with you?
You are. Now join the others. Go.
Black eyes glittering eagerly, Kermadec's brother snatched up everything in sight belonging to the four companions and bolted from the room. It was clear that he had taken on a new attitude.
Penn was less happy about the pending flight.
Kermadec, he said, drawing the big troll's attention,
I'm sorry about this. I shouldn't have let Tagwin talk me into coming. Look what I've done.
To his surprise, Kermadec laughed.
Well, you can make that argument, Pendaren. You can say that this is all your fault. But the fact remains that we need to bring back the Ard Rhys from where Shadea and those others have sent her. Besides, what's happening now would have happened sooner or later. There's no peace for the trolls of Taupo Ruff while your aunt is lost to us. So don't blame yourself for this. Blame her, if you want to blame anyone, for not listening to me or Bristlebeard when we warned her to be more careful.
He beckoned Tagwin over and gathered all four around him.
Now listen. We haven't much time. Evacuation of the women and children is already underway.
All will be spirited away through tunnels that open onto the other side. The men will follow as soon as they are out. Then a march will be undertaken to reach a new safe hold. We've done this before, and we are practiced at it. Everyone will just disappear. There won't even be a trail left. The druids and the gnomes will never know what happened. But first, we have to get you out. I've selected a dozen trolls to provide escort. That includes Atalan and myself. You'll be as well looked after as possible. But we have to move quickly in the beginning, because as soon as it is discovered we are gone, Trant Rowan is going to realize what we have done and bring his warships over the peaks and down the other side to search for us. He'll have the advantage from the air, because we must cross the Clue Mountains to reach the Inkrum. That's a journey of perhaps a week on foot, a long time to be out in the open, but we haven't any choice.
He looked at each of them in turn, measuring.
Are you up to it? Are you ready to try?
All nodded, but the troll shook his head. His blunt features were tight.
Don't be too quick to sign on. If any of you wants to stay behind, now is the time to tell me. It won't be held against you, not by me or by any of those who go with me.
He paused.
Cinnaminson?
She stiffened. Why do you choose to start with me? Is it because I am blind?
Kermadec reached out with his huge hand and placed it gently on her shoulder.
No, girl. I start with you because you have less of a stake in all this than the others do. It would be easiest for you to walk away.
Once, that was so. She shook her head slowly. Not anymore. My decision is made. I am going.
Kermadec looked at the other three.
Pen, you haven't any choice, so there's no reason to ask you. And Tagwin will go, because he doesn't trust me to get the job done alone. What of you, Kyber Elisadil?
She gave him a fierce look.
I will go because my uncle would have gone if he had lived. I stand now in his shoes.
Kermadec nodded his approval.
Then we're a company.
He wheeled away.
Come with me.
He led them back down the corridor they had come through earlier, toward the shouting of fighters and the thunder of siege weapons. Pen felt his temperature rise and his hands begin to sweat as the sounds of battle reverberated through the mountain catacombs. He remembered how it had felt to be chased through the streets of the village, dodging arrows and slingstones, trying to stay safe. He did not care to experience that again, and yet it seemed as if that was exactly what was going to happen. He wished they had an airship and could simply fly away. He wanted to be back in the skies, where he felt safe. The main chamber of the redoubt was filled with trolls charging in all directions. The men stood at the walls where the cliffs opened to the village below, crouching behind their fortifications as boulders smashed into the rock and arrows whizzed past their heads. The women and children were making their way in small groups toward the back part of the cavern, then filing down a series of tunnels into the torchlit dark. The women, distinctive by their smoother skin and slender bodies, herded the tiny children like puppies, urging them along, carrying those too small to walk. They seemed calm on the face of things, moving deliberately and with purpose, evidencing none of the panic that Penn felt. Their self-control impressed the boy, and he tightened his own resolve. With Kermadec leading the way, they hurried after the women and children. Dust was falling from the cavern ceiling as the pounding of the catapult missiles against the rock walls grew more insistent, the resulting reverberations deep and threatening. It felt as if the mountain might come down about them, broken in two by the constant hammering. Pen ducked his head instinctively and reached over to take Cinnaminson's hand. He did so as much for himself as for her, and was grateful when she squeezed his fingers reassuringly. They were mingling with the women and children now, the latter staring up at him with curious, anxious eyes. He tried not to read accusation in those stares,
the children wouldn't know that their upheaval was his fault. He smiled at them as he hurried past. He didn't know how else to tell them that he wanted them to think better of him than he thought of himself.
"Stay together,"
Kermadec called back. Silt rained down on Penn in a sudden shower, and he tripped over one of the children. Releasing Cinnaminson's hand, he paused to pick the child up, brushing off its tiny head, handing it back to the closest of the women. The woman took the child and smiled at him, her strange black eyes and smooth features drawing him in. Something in the look she gave him reminded him of his mother, and suddenly he missed her so that it made him ache. The shock was like a physical blow, and it left him stunned and momentarily disoriented. His world compressed to a tightness about his heart, where the things he needed most felt the farthest away. Still struggling with his feelings, he hurried after the others.
Chapter 16. They fled through the tunnels, away from Taupo Ruff and deep into the mountain rock. At first, they followed the women and children, a part of their steady flow, down the bolt holes, and then they broke away to follow a different set of tunnels and did not see them again. Penn and the rest of their small group moved swiftly and purposefully, sliding through the darkness with torches to light the way and a sense of urgency to keep them focused. The din of the battle they had escaped was audible for a time, then dimmed and faded, and they were left with the soft scrape and rustle of their own movements in the ensuing silence. No one spoke. All of their efforts were concentrated on moving through the tunnels, on getting clear of the pursuit that was sure to follow. It might be that the druids and their gnome hunters couldn't track them through the rock corridors, but Penn knew that Kermadec and his trolls would not rely on that. He held Cinnaminson's hand as they went, drawing on the strength he found there, reassuring himself that she was with him. He didn't even try to tell himself that the contact was for her. He knew that she was better able to navigate the dark than he was. It was to keep his despair and loneliness at bay, for he was afraid that otherwise, without the feel of her, he would give way to the dark emotions that threatened to overwhelm his failing sense of purpose and leave him drained of strength. The eyes of those women and children haunted him, burned into his memory, became ghosts in his mind. That wouldn't have happened had he felt less guilt over their fate, but he could not absolve himself of the responsibility he felt, no matter what Kermadec might say. Too much of what had transpired already on the journey was directly attributable to him. Fortunes altered, plans shattered, and lives given up. That was pretty much the story for everyone with whom he had come in contact since leaving Patch Run. It might not be his fault, and his involvement might not matter anyway in the long run, but he could only see what was, not what might be. His presence was the catalyst for everything that had happened. So much depended on him, and the weight of it was terrifying.
"Keep right,"
Kermadec called over his shoulder, motioning toward Penn and his companions.
"Don't look down."
They entered a cavern that dropped away on the left into a black hole so vast that it looked as if it could swallow whole villages. The trail became a narrow ledge that hugged the wall of the cavern, and the company pressed close to that wall as they edged forward. They were strung out in single file, torches spaced along the ledge. Penn could see for the first time the other trolls who had joined them somewhere along the way, a line of burly, dark shadows in the flicker of the firelight. They wore no armor, only leather tunics and pants, closed-toe sandals, and heavy cloaks. All carried weapons strapped across their backs, along with packs of supplies. They moved ponderously, but with no visible effort or strain. They had the look of massive rocks into which faces had been carved. On the far side of the cavern, a tunnel opened into the rock wall, and soon they were burrowing downward once more.
They had been descending steadily since they had set out, and if Penn was judging right, they were below the level of the village of Taupo Ruff by several hundred feet. He wanted to know where they were going, wanted to reach a place where he could ask, and wanted most of all to get out in the open air again, where he could breathe. The mountain and its darkness pressed down against him with suffocating force. He was a flyer, born to the air, and he hated being closed away. But the tunnels wound on, deep and dark passageways, thick with stale air and tar smoke, dead-feeling and tomb-like. Penn closed his mind to them after a while, a defense against his distaste and the hint of fear that lay behind it. He whispered now and again to Cinnaminson, just so that he could hear her voice. Each time, she squeezed his hand, as if sensing his need to make contact. When they finally emerged from the tunnels, it was late afternoon, and the sun had disappeared behind the peaks west, the light gone gray and misty. A narrow wedge of sky was visible overhead, distant and thick with clouds. They were deep in a valley where the shadows were so heavily layered that the trees carpeting the slopes surrounding them seemed already given over to night. Mountains rose all about them in sheer cliffs and jagged edges. Penn stood with the others, breathing the fresh, cold air and thinking that he had somehow tunneled down to the bottom of the world and must now climb back out again before he lost his way forever. Kermadec was speaking in his deep, calm voice with one of the trolls at the front of the line, but the conversation was being conducted in his own tongue so that Penn could not understand it. When they were finished, the other troll disappeared into the trees, and Kermadec walked over to the boy and his companions.
Barak will scout ahead to make sure the way is safe. We will follow in a few minutes.
He gestured toward the dense line of peaks that lay east.
These are the clue,
part of the charnels, but their own range as well. To the extent that it's possible to do so, we'll travel at night from here on. He paused.
Is everyone all right?
They nodded, all of them, but with nothing that approached enthusiasm. Penn was somewhat relieved to find that his companion